Hey, welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. This program is brought to you by Heather Barnes Media and Play Audio. Our very special guest today is Sophie Rue, visionary Gen Z founder and CEO of Bloombox Design Labs. She has done a remarkable number of things in her young life, and I think it's underscored by her unwavering commitment to women's education. We're going to hear all about this from Sophie. Sophie, welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's an absolute honor to be here today.
I'm glad we were able to chase you down today. And would you please tell everybody the rest of your story, including where you're from originally and your current educational system there at the one and only Stanford University?
Of course. It'd be my pleasure. Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie. I am 19 years old and I'm from Vancouver, Canada. In my opinion, Vancouver is the most beautiful city on earth. We are surrounded by mountains and forests and ocean and a glass city on the edge. And I think it definitely informed my love of architecture and kind of its intersections with the environment and sustainability. And I also grew up going to all-girls school. So I was sort of always exposed to young women leading in all aspects of life, be it on the field, you know, at the math whiteboard, and in the art studio. And so I think I always saw that the girls can do anything, and I wanted to dedicate my life to promoting their access to education around the world, especially as I learned that that's not always the case for all girls. My more recent ventures, so I guess I started by selling my artwork to try to raise money to support girls' education, and that was executed through raising money for water wells and also sanitary pad making machines. And then most recently, Bloomboxes. So I am the founder of Bloombox Design Labs, which is my public benefit company that I'm really proud of and that I think about every minute of the day, which works to scale solar-powered computer labs built out of repurposed shipping containers with retractable roof systems to remote off-grid locations to provide high-quality maker spaces for students who may never have had access to electricity or technology in their classrooms. And then I guess this past, so I started school at Stanford last year. I absolutely loved it. I'm taking architecture, design, and engineering, and I found it to be a place better than I'd ever imagined, even though I'd dreamed of it since I was really little, and I watched the lead female character in High School Musical attend Stanford. I made it my mission to go there as well. And it's just a magical place. But then I decided to take a quarter off of school to work full time on my company. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I'll be returning to Stanford in the winter, but I've learned a lot about business and life and leadership. And I'm really excited to be leading this company and to have the privilege to talk about it today.
Yeah, truly amazing. And Sophie, I want you to tell our listening audience about the moment of that idea being born, the epiphany of Bloombox.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking. I think for me, it was nothing has ever come to me like out of the blue. I think it's always been sort of a process. So with Bloombox, I guess I've always... Okay, how do I start this? I think addressing challenges requires like taking a design thinking approach. That's how I've always done it, is to try to see how I can leverage design to address big problems. So it's sort of just been reactionary. So I visited a school in Malawi and I got to spend some time there painting a mural at a high school. And in those days, I got to spend kind of interacting with students as they would come in and out of classrooms and hearing about, you know, their interests and passions. And I came home and I got me thinking, like, you know, these are amazing high school students with no electricity in their classroom. How can I help? All I really knew how to do was design a solution. So I wanted to do that. And I thought it was bigger than just bringing computers or bringing solar panels. I wanted them to have a space to create. I also knew that anything that I built in Vancouver would have to be shipped to Malawi anyways. So that's kind of how the idea for why don't we use the structure of the container itself as the lab, and then pack everything inside and build it out of that later, kind of came to be. And I found that that's been my model for this whole project, even as we scale. It's just how can we use the tools we have to kind of build the best possible solution. So that's where it was born. It was born out of a lot of conversations with mentors, asking a lot of questions, because I was in the 10th grade when it started. So I had no architectural training. I feel very lucky about how it evolved.
I'm going to ask you a series of questions that have been designed around, I think, the intersection of lots of domains. And the first one is, tell us about the role of sustainable architecture in enhancing educational experiences.
This is something I think about every minute. I think that sustainable architecture is, of course, the future of the planet. We need to be designing for all the challenges we're facing, overpopulation, climate change, require us to be rethinking the way we build the future to kind of support the way our world is moving. And then as it relates to girls' education, I think that there's something to be said about having a space where you feel welcome to create and to innovate. I think that girls have often been excluded from having a seat at the table when it comes to STEM and even STEAM fields. And so I think there's this interesting intersection where we need to be creating spaces where at the junior school and high school age, girls and boys are learning together so that they grow up never seeing kind of a difference between their abilities. And we have the opportunity to do that sustainably and at scale. So I think it's more than just curriculum. It's all of those things, teachers and equipment play huge roles. But I think it's that story of creating a space where you belong, your ideas matter, and kind of what you dream of creating will make our world better. If that's the narrative of the spaces we can make. And I think the way that we can tell that story is by having mobile furniture that allows for the space to transform for student needs, to have them, you know, equipped with anything a kid would need to kind of make something they care about. I think that tells the story that you belong here and your ideas matter. And then if we can make the system itself solar powered, off-grid, mobile, then we have the potential to reach more kids and unlock more potential, which as a global society, we need. Because these problems we're facing are hard, and so we need all hands on deck. And I think there's something interesting, which is that, like, my life has been centered around makerspaces. Like, building the Bloombox has been a makerspace assembly line in itself, and so I kind of want to allow kids to have the opportunities that I've had. And this was my dream. I hope they can build their dreams similarly and with the same level of quality resources in their environments. Mm.
So impressive. I think one of the things in researching Bloombox before this show, we wanted to ask you, who in the world taught you how to be a devout collaborator?
That's beautiful. I'd have to say, everything I know about, like, how to treat people with love and respect, and how to have the courage to stand up for myself and ask questions, I think has come from my family, my parents and my grandma for sure. I think they sort of instilled in me this idea that I may not always have answers to big problems, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't ask big questions and that I shouldn't feel problems deeply. And then to kind of always be open to learning and getting better. I'm entering a field, sustainable global development architecture, that I think is is pretty new, and that I think we have a chance to shape. And so I think part of like being a collaborator is being always open to learning, and learning from people from different backgrounds at all times, different training and expertise, and all ages. So I definitely have seen that model in my mom too. My mom and I work closely on Bloombox together. She's my head of logistics, actually, and I've watched her model of leadership, which is kind of to lead from the back and to support other people, making them feel that and know that their ideas matter as well. I think that's the best way to collaborate. And also, one more thing is I think that if you share a vision that other people believe in, you know, they will apply their unique skills to it, and you need that. So I think bringing people in and showing them that their expertise has a lot of value in what you're trying to do makes the environment better and more collaborative for everyone. I'd say my family for sure.
Yeah, indeed it does. Thank you for that. And here's hats off to your family. I want you to tell us a little bit more about the intersection of technology, design, and education in creating this holistic learning environment.
Intersection of technology, design, and education. Okay, well, I think that there's no more exciting field than design right now. And I think that if we take this design thinking approach, which is an iterative process, you know, it starts with empathizing, ideating, prototyping, testing, and then doing that again. We're able to be sensitive to needs when we're designing, and we're able to be thoughtful about how we're making design decisions. And we're able to bring exciting technological innovations into it. And then also, I think part of that is like listening to what students and teachers need. So that ties into the education piece. I don't know. I think those three things are what I think about on a daily basis all the time. And I love that what I do allows me to be working on the design side of things and always making the design and technology better while constantly furthering our mission to get more girls access to high quality education. I think that it's the future. And I love, like, the other day I went back to my high school that I graduated from a couple of years ago, and I gave a speech on design thinking. But it was really cool to see that just in the time that since I'd graduated, they had design thinking posters on the wall, and they were integrating it into their classes and discussions. And just the fact that I'd been asked to speak on that topic when, you know, it was just an emerging idea when I was in middle school and high school is really exciting. And I think our world is definitely barreling towards kind of these interdisciplinary fields in education. So I don't know. I'm really excited about it and excited to be part of it.
You should be. You should be. Something happened to you in Malawi, and I think that you've got a new heart condition, and I want you to describe what happened to your heart after that trip.
Of course. You're right. I've had the privilege of visiting Africa since I was little, mostly South Africa, with my parents. The first time I went to Malawi was a little bit different because it was the first time that I'd contributed some tiny amount of value, which was to raise money for wells. So I felt I had a bit of a stake in it. And we got to go out to the sites of these wells, and to witness these well dedications and meet the children and families that would be using them. And I think, like, when you're out there, it was a little bit hard. It was my mom and I, and we were sitting in the back of a truck for, you know, 7 hours driving into the heart of these communities, and camping. And it's nothing like we'd ever done before. But in the moment, it was so fun and just eye-opening. And then we got to, like, London Heathrow, and I think, you know, we got on the plane right away, right? So we were still sort of covered in dust, and I remember just, like, it was the first time. I was in ninth grade. I remember my ninth grade year being kind of hard because I think, like other ninth graders, I felt the need to really fit in, and to never sure. like take things too personally, to never feel too deeply, even though I was feeling everything all the time. But it was this moment I was just like, Mom, like that. I don't know. I burst into tears, and I couldn't help myself from just like from realizing how much I wanted to help and how powerless I felt in helping. And I think that was definitely a pivotal moment for me, where for the first time it was like, I have to do something at scale, and I'm going to do it no matter what. And so I think I grew up a little bit in that moment. And I think that's where, you know, the idea for Bloombox started. After that, I took courses in architecture and Bloombox begun. But I think that trip to Malawi, spending time at the high school, learning from the kids, I think it was a call to action for me. And so I feel very grateful I was able to go.
Folks, if you didn't hear it, that was the lightning in a bottle moment. Because that's when Sophie moved over from some notion of what success looks like to significance in the ninth grade. So it proving that it can happen to you at any time. And Sophie, that's the reason why you're on the show today, is to inspire others to move their focus from just themselves to others.
Beautiful. Well, I don't know if I can be an inspiration in any way, but thank you for saying it like that. It's cool to be here.
You bet. We're going to be right back after a commercial message, but tell our listeners where they can go to find out more information on Bloombox and possibly contribute to this great enterprise and movement.
Thank you. Please check out bloomboxdesignlabs.com. Our Instagram, sparkly.and.smart, feel free to contact me, sophie@stanford.edu. That's Sophie with an F. Thank you.
You bet. And we will be right back with Sophie Rue in just a moment.
Hello, I'm Heather Barnes, food and product photographer and storyteller behind the lens. Our Austin-based team is all about visual solutions. For your brand, it's essential for your product to be memorable and have stickiness. Our clients like Ghirardelli, Tiff's Treats, and Natamu choose our photography to develop positive associations with their brand. They call our work inspiring because it moves consumers into a relationship with their company. And we can do the same for you. Learn more today at heatherbarnes.com. Focused on you, your story, and your success with memorable photography garnished with love.
And we're back with Sophie Rue. And on the back half of this show, we're going to ask her a few other, perhaps deeper, more philosophical questions. And of all the people that we've interviewed, the ones that have attempted to be masters of a variety of domains, from design to architecture to music, we have labeled them as polymaths. Have you ever been called a polymath?
I haven't, but that's a wonderful label.
Yep. The ones that we, that are our favorites in life are Archimedes and Da Vinci and even Ben Franklin and Albert Einstein, who used to go off and do something different to come up with a different solution to a problem. So if you were to take off for a week or so and go somewhere and do something to be inspired to solve another problem, what would you be doing?
Wow. Well, that's an excellent question. You know, I've always wanted to climb Kilimanjaro, which is, Okay, wait, there's two answers. One is to climb Kilimanjaro, and the other is to ride a bike from Cairo to Cape Town. Both of these experiences would be purely physical, which is not something I'm used to, but they're things I wanted to do, one with my mom and one with my best friend from high school. I think that, like, any opportunity to see more of the world is important. And also to be reminded that you have the strength within you to do hard things. Sometimes I feel like running a small business is a little bit like a long endurance bike ride where you're constantly getting hit in the face with random challenges, and it's hard to keep going. I think maybe the bike ride would be a good analogy for life after I finish. The other thing is, just to spend time with people that I love. It always reminds me of like why I do things, and inspires me to think of things from a different angle. Then I think reaching the top or reaching Cape Town would be a pretty significant moment, and just a good reminder for the rest of my life, I think.
Thank you for that. We've had the good fortune of traveling around the world, and over the course of time, we've become archaeologists and I would say fans of architecture. If there were two or three buildings or bridges around the world that you admire, what are they?
First one would be Javier Sanosian's organic house. It's a beautiful house with no corners. He's a Mexican architect inspired by traditional, Mexican storytelling, as well as like just the nature he surrounds himself with. I think I would love to see that place and to hear the sounds, how sound bounces off those walls, and to consider how he thought about the environment in every single design decision. That would be one. Number two. I worked for an architect in Utah. There's five. Two architects I worked for. One in Utah, who was designing a house kind of on Powder Mountain, which I only got to see in the summer. I would love to see it in the winter, because he gave me my first job in architecture during COVID, when nobody else would give an internship to a 15-year-old kid. And I really believe in his work a lot. I worked for an architect in Newfoundland, and I spent this past summer kind of learning SketchUp and doing this very tedious model. It was the first time I had to translate plans into like a real 3D model, and I asked too many questions, and I really annoyed my desk mate Dave, but I'd love to see it in real life. It was a women's house, an Indigenous women's house, sometimes when I would get really annoyed with all the controls I didn't know how to use, I would remember that it was to serve some pretty incredible women. So I'd love to see that in action.
Oh, very good. So you've got this notion of including design in future curriculum, and I bet you it touches all fields. And my dad happened to be a designer, so I am drinking your Kool-Aid, because I think great design is at the basis of everything, including a great jazz band. It's about how you design and the chemistry and its collaboration. So the older I get, the more I'm seeing design is the center of everything. And I just bought a book for Christmas for my son-in-law that was about geometry and design that you see in nature. And it had so many things that were related to ancient history. It's like I am blown away by the importance of design. And I'm wondering, in your lifetime, what would you want to have accomplished in terms of getting design into everybody's head and into practice?
I think collaboration and design are at the heart of everything. And I think that, people are starting to realize that taking a design approach is important. But I think what I would want people to realize is that the challenges we're facing in this century, like I was saying, they're urgent and they're complex. Getting like universal access to proper healthcare, clean water, education, addressing climate change, supporting the people that are most disproportionately affected by climate change, as we move into like an even more connected reality, I think digitally as well, we're going to need to be making ethical decisions, and we're going to be needing to take this design thinking approach. So I think if everyone could use design as a tool to tackle the problems that care about that they care about most, I think that would be important. I know I keep coming back to the design thinking approach, but really what it is it's a guideline for being thoughtful and relentless when you're pursuing a solution. So I think if people could see design rather than like an isolated field that's very connected to, visual art, I think, and if they could see it instead as just a tool in their tool belt for doing what they want to do, I think that there are huge intersections in almost every field we can think of. So that's what I would want. I would want people to feel supported by design and included in it, even if they don't see themselves as designers.
Sophie, you are remarkable, and you are one of those rare people who have moved from success to significance already. And we want to make sure that our listening audience supports you. And we also want to feature you in a book called Conversations of Significance. And you will be, I can guarantee, you will be the youngest person that'll be featured. It is exciting, but you you so richly deserve it. I also want to thank your mom for the positive influence that she's has and continues, and make sure folks to remember that your children, your offspring, are the future for the world. And so thank you. Thanks, Mom, for what you've done and all your other mentors. Give out your website one more time so our listening audience can support you.
Thank you, Rick. It's bloomboxdesignlabs.com. That's bloombox designlabs.com. You can follow us on social media, but it's at Sparkly and Smart, which was the social enterprise I started when I was in the seventh grade. I can also send you those links. Maybe you could distribute that. Thank you very much. I just wanted to say, like, thanks for sharing your platform with me. I think it's really lucky that I get chances like this to kind of reflect on what I'm doing, because I'm very new at all this, and I don't know what I'm doing or if I have any wisdom, but it definitely helps me reset and get re-inspired to keep on going.
You bet. You've got such clarity. I hope that the rest of your journey, and especially in college, doesn't muddy up your clarity. So try to stay clear with this discernment and remember the way you are right now, okay? Because there's so much richness to that simplicity, being profound and pure and focused, especially on design. That was Sophie Rue, visionary founder and CEO of Bloombox Design Labs. And we appreciate her being on today. And folks, as we always say, we wish you a successful life, but on your way to significance. Have a great week.